Yeah. We were just waiting for you, but I mean.
Do I need a microphone?
Yeah.
Yeah, because we are recording. Otherwise, but we won't hear your questions.
You'll have a quiet afternoon there in moving the mic around.
This one?
Is it on?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so the first thing I wanted to ask about was on the margin development. You outlined some of the reasons for the weakness, and it seemed to me, as you described it, that some of these were cyclical factors and some were structural factors. So where you are in some of the product cycles, a lot of instrument placements happening at the moment, I would expect to have a margin implication versus that turning into consumables. Perhaps the more structural changes were gross margin pressure, presumably in diabetes care, and other margin pressure there. So can you give some sense of how much of what we've seen over the last few years in the margin pressure in the division has been those structural factors, and I suppose I put mix in there as well, versus what have been cyclical points of where you are in the product cycle?
Yeah, thank you, and a very good question. I'm going to try to give you some indication. You know that we're not guiding on the diagnostics level, so obviously, as you pointed out, the pressure on the diagnostics, on the diabetes margin has been one of these factors, clearly, stemming from the U.S. it's hard to foresee where we are there, but what we certainly see is that the big rebasing has happened because the reimbursement cut of the 70% or 72 to be precise is now fully absorbed in the market. Now, there has been a second reimbursement cut of 20%, but that is, of course, off a lower base. It will impact us in 17 and probably also beyond, as these are cycles where typically insurance companies have 3-4 year contracts, and then you go into the renegotiations. It's also about the formulary. Are you on? Are you not on? And there's lots of details there to observe. But that's for diabetes care. I would say we'll continue to have a very busy year and years going forward in bringing innovation to the market. I think our model is really about driving the top line and then, of course, driving innovation. But, of course, we'll always strive to improve our results. And we'll do that, of course, also through the course of 17. And then lastly, I would say the Forex impact on suppliers, that's one that's difficult to predict. But you've heard Alan say that there are pretty big swings. We expect some further volatility, but that is very hard to predict. And then on the R&D line, you won't see the same increase going forward because we're talking very specific investments from a set base now. One is, as I try to outline, the ongoing business, the core business, and the other one is a very specific program around sequencing, and that's where we've seen the biggest step up over the last couple of years, and also notably last year, there's been a significant increase in sequencing as we continue to grow that franchise, and as we said, that we want to build this end-to-end solution in sequencing. I hope that kind of puts it in perspective.
You also referred to manufacturing capacity expansion that goes to the factory being built in China. Right. When will that be fully ramped in terms of the ongoing expense for be it depreciation or just the fixed running costs of that facility?
Right. So we expect to be fully operational in China by 2018. However, of course, this will be a time when then we start to get everything online, and of course the COGS coming out of that site will potentially be higher initially until we're fully at full capacity than in other sites. So we also have invested in that facility to get closer to the market. There's other benefits and being closer to the fastest growing and second biggest market at this stage. Eventually even becoming the largest market. So there's also an element about expanding the capacity here that we would have to do something in any case, and we chose to go to China. So that, I think that all makes sense. You should see this again as a program that be fully online 2018, but not at full capacity then.
Then on diabetes care, specifically, have you disclosed how big the U.S. is within that? I think it's a bit over 2 billion Swiss francs for the whole of diabetes care.
Right.
How much within that is the U.S.? Presumably it's a much smaller proportion than it used to be.
Well, it's become much smaller, unfortunately, as a result of these reimbursement cuts. So I'd say it's below 300 million Swiss francs at this stage. It's also no more the largest market for us in diabetes, which just tells you how much the prices have suffered.
The second area I wanted to ask about was Latin America is showing a strong constant currency mm-hmm. growth rate. I just wanted to check. I see a number of companies adopt different approaches to determining constant currency growth rates where you've got significantly falling currencies. So is this a situation where you've protected the effective price you're getting in US dollars or Swiss francs, or do you effectively have a fixed price in local currencies that goes up and down?
No fixed price in local currency. This wouldn't be accepted by the customers, especially not in the big, largely in the public tenders, of course. It's very hard to push that through. We have to look at Latin America country by country, of course. For some time, it was very difficult to even consider anything like a price increase in Argentina while the currency devaluated. Last year, we've seen that in a different way. We've had, a triple impact, a triple positive impact in a country like Argentina. First of all, we have a volume growth, an underlying volume growth. Secondly, we're able to increase the prices, which, of course, is always beneficial. And thirdly, we've seen a stabilization of the currency. So that has also contributed to the very strong result in some of Latin America. For other countries, it's different. We had some large tenders that we won in Brazil and in Mexico. So it's a very mixed performance, but in totality, it's a very positive performance in Latin America.
In principle, when you have a currency devaluing due to high inflation, the way you report the constant currency growth rate, do you consider that inflation price increase, if you get it, to
yes.
be part of constant
yes.
currency growth?
Yes, rate? Yes, that's correct.
Then, as going back to the first topic, what should we think about needing to happen for the overall margin to stabilize? I appreciate there are moving parts that are actually pretty unrelated to each other, from as you described. But we've had a few consecutive years of the margin decline, and perhaps in general terms, what do you see needing to happen?
Well, I think it's absolutely possible that we go back to those ratios. I think we have had a period of now a conscious and also communicated high investments in R&D. These R&D investments, in some extent, have also now translated into high cost of launch, where our products are being installed in the markets. Not all the instruments are being sold, so that there is an initiation phase there as well. And then there have been some of the, more special effects, particularly around diabetes care. But the way we look at our model and what we built into our business plan is about a price decrease of roughly 3% per year. So if we grow anywhere between 7 and 9%, that will give you a double-digit unit growth or volume growth. And then in that model, we absolutely have the opportunity to leverage that. We don't have the opportunity to leverage that if all the factors come in at the same time, but overall, I think that's absolutely doable, and that should be our ambition, of course, is to get back to what you refer to that base or to those ratios. We have a lot of internal efficiency programs that are ongoing. I think Alan showed a few of them. that, of course, needs to be done in any case. That's just good business practice, and we're in the midst of some of these. We will continue with those. Also, of course, to free up the resources to be able to continue to invest in innovation, but innovation that really in the end, of course, allows us to leverage our P&L. That should be our ambition.
On new launches, you have the label on one of the business lines of centralized and point of care mm-hmm. solutions. I think about a year ago you showed a point of care device on upper respiratory tract infections that seemed, I suppose, an exciting new line of business. How is that, and I suppose more generally, point of care developing? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I remember that point of care solutions was always the way you described that business. I'm wondering if that's increasing in importance for you.
No, that's absolutely true, and we didn't really speak much about it today. I think it's more due to the fact that we wanted to concentrate on some of the areas, some of the new launches. Last year, indeed, we launched a product that was called LIAT, literally stands for Lab in a Tube. It's the only point of care solution that can actually do a PCR reaction in a lab-like with lab-like results. Been very pleased with the progress here. We have a full respiratory panel that is FDA approved, that is CE marked. So that's been going very, very well. We have also transferred the entire design and manufacturing to from the originating site to our established sites. So we'll manufacture the assays in New Jersey area, where we manufacture every other assay for molecular. And the instruments are now manufactured in Switzerland in the large manufacturing hub where we manufacture other molecular instruments and other instruments. So that has been a big effort. Good reception in the marketplace, but we have focused and concentrated deliberately only on the U.S., and we really wanted to make sure we get the U.S. right and the full panel in respiratory. And this is why also I've mentioned today that now that we have that panel, we're going to expand the assay and the menu to, in this case, hospital-acquired infections. And further out, infectious disease, of course, are very much in the line of sight. So why focus on the U.S. and why on that panel is because if you don't have a full panel, you're going to find it hard to find customers. And the U.S., of course, has the biggest opportunity around respiratory tract infections with a reimbursement, whereas in Europe there is no specific reimbursement by, for instance, different areas or diseases like influenza as opposed to flu. So that's where we are. What has been a bit softer than expected has been the onset of the flu season in the U.S. So this is initially that product is fairly cyclical. It's around the flu season in the Northern Hemisphere, but as we expand the menu, of course, it will find more. It will find a different segment and different base. But I think that's been the same as for Tamiflu. The sales have been somewhat slower than in previous years, and that's really due to the fact that the flu season was less pronounced than in previous years.
And then I think my last question on diabetes care, going back to that, you said before that about 300 million Swiss francs is now the US. Diabetes care has been a big drag on your top line, mm-hmm. but at 300 million out of a top line of over 11 billion, the scale of decline that has to happen now to be a significant drag in future is it has to be truly a repeat of the scale of another 70% level declines. So is it reasonable to assume therefore that this just becomes less of a factor, or are you seeing similar levels of pressure in other regions as well for diabetes care?
I'd say we see pressure in other areas, but the impact will, of course, be different because the U.S. is by far the largest market and has come down from a highest price to one that's now about comparable to European prices. But the pressure will persist in many markets. It's just in the nature of diabetes testing that you see a lot of pressure because on one hand, it's probably an area where it's easy for reimbursement authorities to come in and reduce prices because you measure only one biomarker as opposed to the rest of diagnostics where you have a broad panel and dozens, if not hundreds, of measurements. The other area, of course, is, or the other reason is, of course, the continuous growth of people with diabetes is just exceptional. We have about 400 million people with diabetes worldwide, and that number is supposed to grow to close to 600 million over the next 20 to 30 years. So that is something that is going to become a huge drain, of course, on healthcare systems. And the easiest way is to go and cut on the existing costs. We believe it's the wrong approach. We feel that we're part of the solution in how you better manage diabetes. But of course, there are so many associated costs in managing diabetes. The worst that can happen is if people are left alone and then have all the negative and long-term side effects, of course. But we also know that these are being looked at in very different views and buckets. I mean, the cost buckets are different in the healthcare system for that. But yeah, in a nutshell, I'd say price pressure will continue. I expect it to be in a lesser range than what we've seen in the US because of the magnitude and the size of the market. But we'll also see some further shifts in the market from traditional glucose monitoring to continuous, and that also needs to be accounted for. Thank you. Thanks for your interest.
Thank you.
Thank you.